Hello, everyone, and welcome to Shmuel, the Book of Samuel. And thank you, Rav Joe, for enabling me, giving me the honor and privilege of opening up one of my favorite books in the Tanakh, and absolutely one of my favorite chapters and one of my favorite stories. We open the book of Shmuel Aleph. There are two books, Samuel 1, Samuel 2. And we open up with a story that is going to give us a lot of background. For probably, the first half of this entire book is really setting us up for the start of monarchy in Judaism. The start of a monarchy which, begins with King Saul and then becomes King David. And then we go into the saga of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. So, or the kings of Judah and the kings of Israel in that order. So, with that in mind, before people are like, why do we have this story? We also are going to learn that Shmuel, the prophet Samuel, is the last of the judges, the last of the Shoftim period. So we just ended with the tragedy of the civil war in Pilgash Bagiv'ah, and now we're moving into what's actually going on with the people in the time or in lead up to Shmuel. So that is just a little historical background. And now we go into a really fascinating, very richly texturized story of some really important characters. Now, this is actually a familiar story to many because it's read as a haftarah on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, in most traditional Jewish communities. And it's a very powerful, very emotive story that teaches us a lot about prayer. The story begins telling us about a man called Elkanah, who was living in the area of Ephraim, but he happened to be very dedicated to the annual pilgrimages. It sounds like maybe in that time, historically, not everyone was going to do the pilgrimages at the different festival seasons. And where were this pilgrimage? There was no temple at that time. There was no Beit HaMikdash in Jerusalem, but there was a Mishkan, a tabernacle in Shiloh. And every year he would go with his entire family. He had many sons and he had children and he had two wives. One of them was called Chana. Chana was his most beloved wife, but she had no children. And his other wife was Peninnah and she had many children. And he would go with his whole entourage and every year they would participate in the sacrifice rituals. They would, it's imagine just making a massive barbecue to celebrate God, bringing up the best of the flocks. Slaughtering it, having a delicious barbecue, singing, whatever else they did to celebrate and feast. And obviously, a big proportion of that would go to the priests. The priests in that place, the high priest, Kohen Gadol, was a man called Eli, and he had two sons, Hophni and Pinchas. And they would do all kinds of administering work. So, in the days before rabbis, these were the guys who you went to when you wanted to connect with God. These were the so-called gatekeepers of everyone's relationship. How did you connect to God? You went and you brought an animal. What did you do? You donated some of it to God's people or to God's servants, which was the priests, and then you would take some of it for yourself and your family, you would celebrate, and then you would go home. That was what they did every year. One year, Elkanah shows up with his family. And his wife, Chana, is depressed. She won't eat. She won't participate in the party. She's just pretty miserable. And it's obvious that this is to do with her barrenness, her lack of, being a woman in ancient times without a child meant that you really were lacking status of your own. If your only way of actualizing yourself is through your husband and through your children, not having children was a very intense moment. Now, in the Talmud, there's discussion about Chana and the nature of her prayer as also being part of her actual feeling a lack in her physical body. And we'll talk about that when we get to her prayer, because I actually see that as an empowering moment. Now, Chana is feeling pretty depressed, so she wants to go home early and not talk to anyone, not eat anything. But Elkanah thinks that he can solve everything and says, "Come on, my love, why aren't you eating? Why are you depressed? Like, aren't I better to you than 10 sons? Come on, smile." And she's like, "Dude, you have no idea." Every year, she would just be so depressed when she was in this place. Where she was surrounded by people who were celebrating with their families and with their children, she couldn't be part of it. This one year, things were just really bad. And when Elkanah said to her, "Oh, come on, I'm better than 10 sons," she's like, not. And she got up and she went into the sanctuary. And when she was at that place, which was sort of the main center area where they would actually have, sacred ritual and ceremony with God, she said, "This is my moment." And she broke into a prayer. It says in the Pasuk, "V'hi marat nefesh v'palel al Hashem uvocha tivkeh," that she was broken of spirit and she cried and she cried and spoke to God. And this was very unique at the time. People did not do private prayer. People did not do emotional prayer. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But from the context of the story, we understand that it was very unusual. At that point, she also did what we might call cut a deal with God. And she said, "Listen, I swear that if you see my pain and you witness that and grant me with a child, I will dedicate that child to God all of my life." That means, in those days, there was a tradition called Nazir. I think we just talked about that with Shimshon in the Judges portion, that it meant not cutting the hair and other sorts of things that would categorize someone as sacred and as of a different caliber in serving God. And she said, "I promise this to you, God. Like, I don't even want a child for myself. I want a child because I want to be the one who brings a baby into this earth and is their parent. And it's not important to me that I get to benefit from him in my old age. I want him to be here to serve God." And it's a very powerful prayer because she was really saying this in a way of selflessness. And the Talmud has its own opinion about Chana saying, this body was made for bearing children. Like, what? Why else am I alive?" And I think it's hard sometimes to reconcile that with wanting to fully actualize ourselves today outside of who we are as parents or who we are as physical beings. But I think there's something really powerful here as an embodied prayer that Chana was bringing forth, in that she was saying, "I'm here on this planet for something. I don't know what it is, but within the cultural context of where I live, that something is what I want to do, and I'm prepared to do anything for it. And I'm here, willing, ready to enable this to come through me." And I think that's actually a really powerful place to be. Now, she also, as she's doing this, what was interesting or what was noticeable about her prayer is that she did not, she didn't move, she didn't speak out loud. She wasn't crying like and screaming. She just kind of had her lips moving and was silent in her prayer. And this was strange. Maybe back in those days, people would kind of scream and ecstatically pray, but they wouldn't cry and shake and whisper. That was just very unique. And when Eli saw her, it says in the text, but Vayechshveha Eli Lishkara, and Eli thought of her as a drunk woman. And what's really interesting here is, there's different midrashic explanations that, oh, did he use some sort of oracle to find out that she was drunk? Did that oracle called the Urim V'Tumim actually tell him that she was kashera, that she was kosher, and he misread it? Was it some misogynistic ploy at, oh my God, there's a woman here doing something that I can't handle? That's one of my readings of it. And another interesting thing comes from what Eli says, which is he says to her, "Ad matai tishtakeirun, tishtakarin haseri et yenech mehalech. How long will you be drunk? Remove your wine from upon you." And when he says, "How long will you be drunk?" and he thinks of her as being drunk, there's a beautiful explanation that what was Eli worried about, if we want to try and read this, judge him favorably for what he's saying and understand this as a lesson for ourselves. He was saying, "How long will you be drunk on your own prayer? You're so consumed with your own sorrow and your own pain. Is this all you care about? You're here among hundreds and thousands of pilgrims, and everyone has their own thing going on in their lives, and everyone has their pain and their sorrows and their pleasure and their beauty and the things in their life. And you're sitting here crying and obviously not wailing, but you're sitting here broken and praying, and you must be drunk that you're even forgetting the God that you're speaking to. You're just drunk on your own idea and your own prayer." And Hannah said, "No, I'm not drunk." She said, "I haven't had anything to drink, Ishak shat ruach anochi. I am a woman of broken spirit. And when she's what she's answering him here is, I'm not drunk on my own prayer. This isn't about me. I'm not praying because I'm offended by my rival. It said earlier in the parak that her rival Peninnah, her husband's other wife, used to tease her that she didn't have children. That's not what this is about. I'm broken of spirit because I know that I was put here on this earth for a reason, and that I will bear a child who's special to the world, and I want to fulfill my destiny for the sake of the world, not just for me. And I think, again, sometimes it's really hard to receive that sort of self-effacing story from our ancestors who behave that way. But in reality, there's a lot for us to learn from that, because these stories, these archetypes of ancient women, and there aren't that many women like that that we have stories of that are so richly caricatured like Chana, can really teach us a lot about being able to work towards a larger goal and see a bigger picture, and also advocate for yourself. And she really advocated for herself. She said, I didn't drink anything. I'm pouring out my soul here before God. Who do you think you are, Ailey? That's not exactly what she said, but she said, I'm pouring my soul out before God. Don't think of your servant as a bat bliel, as a daughter of a stupid man, which doesn't, that's not exactly what it means. As a woman, as a foolish woman, because from the depths of my pain and my anger, I'm speaking. And when Ailey hears that, he says to her, okay, go in peace and God will fulfill your request. And it's a very interesting blessing that he gives her. He doesn't just give her a blessing. He actually says it's going to be fulfilled. And she goes off. And sure enough, a year later, Chana bears a child. And she calls him Shmuel. Shmu from hear or listen. And El, God's name. Because I asked him from God and God answered me and God heard me. And that year, the whole family went back on their pilgrimage, but Chana didn't go. She stayed with the child for the next 3 years until he was weaned, and then she brought him back to the sanctuary, and this time she brought him with a bunch of sacrifices, and this time she also brought her child with the intention of him now remaining with Eli, with the high priest, at the Mishkan in service of God. She said, Eli, Elanar hazehi palalti. I prayed for this child, and Vayitena Shem Liachelati, and God gave me this child that I asked from him. And now I'm bringing him to God so that he can serve all the days of his life here with you and your community at the tabernacle. And that's what happened in Shmuel Perek Aleph. Thank you for listening.